This is The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. on Canada Talks, SiriusXM 167.
Hello and welcome to The Feed with Amber Mack.
And Michael B. for everything new now and next.
We have you covered for what's happening in the world of tech and what's trending online.
On the show, we speak with one of the experts who signed a letter to Spotify about the Joe Rogan Experience.
Plus, Debbie Travis joins us to chat about how to find a little extra joy in our lives.
Also on the show, we talk to one company making estate planning easier online.
And we tell you which giant retailer is taking a jump into the metaverse.
That's all coming up right here on The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B.
This episode of The Feed is brought to you by Norton, one of the leading consumer cybersecurity brands.
Trending up.
Amber Mack, I can't believe I'm going to say this, but I love snow. I can't believe I said this. I've never said this. I think for the entire time we've ever known each other, I've always complained and been a little baby when it comes to cold weather and the snow.
Yeah, I know that you are out in Vail right now and you are enjoying some ski time. Here in Toronto, where I am and where Aaron is, the snow has led to a lot of disruptions over the past few days. Many people unable to get to work, kids out of school for the first 2 days of this past week. So it really depends where you are. So I think you are in the perfect place for a lot of snow. Sometimes
I'm in the mountain, no one's around and it's quiet and I'm with nature and I haven't done that for quite some time. It's beautiful. And it's you walk everywhere. You have to wear a gazillion layers because it's minus 15 or 20 on a good day Celsius. But it's great. You're right. I think it depends where you are, but it is snow can be beautiful. It's not great when you're in a commute. I know that. I don't like it when it's in the city.
Absolutely. And I agree that it can be beautiful as well. And I know many kids enjoyed it earlier this week than when they can go out and sled.
Luge. Yeah, they could go sledding. So fun. Does Connor go sledding?
Yes, he does. Most Canadian kids have had some sort of sledding experience. So he's definitely been enjoying it. And, he was okay with a day off school. I think 2 days he was kind of ready to go back. But nonetheless, we've had some wild weather in all parts of North America over the past couple of weeks. So it's certainly been interesting. And Michael, continue to have fun. We do have some news to get to, though, because first up, we need to talk about Meta. Formerly Facebook, according to BBC, they are facing a £1 billion class action case. So that's a lot of money, Michael.
It certainly is. And I just wonder again, and we talk about this all the time when Meta, or previously named Facebook, is in the headlines and is being sued. Will it make a difference? Will it set a precedent? Will it change things? And I don't know. Again, a lot of the headlines that you read, they think maybe this one is going to do it. But we'll have to see. I don't believe it's the first time and it won't be the last time that we've seen large tech companies like this, problems in the marketplace and be accused of doing things they shouldn't when it comes to competition. So I just don't know. But this one is quite a large one. It's a £2.3 billion. So $3.1 billion, I think it is about roughly the equivalent. So it's a good chunk of change.
Yeah, absolutely. And just if you're not familiar with the case, essentially what's going on, according to the BBC, is that they are saying that Facebook harvests data from people in the UK between 2015 and 2019. And essentially, they made excessive profits off of that data. So that is what they are talking about in terms of how Facebook has been over the years leveraging individual people's data to be able to maximize their advertising profits. And at no point, of course, does the individual who's sharing their personal information ever get any piece of that. So we will keep an eye on that. Certainly not the last lawsuit, but we do want to get to the next story. This is an interesting one. I just watched this on the news this week, Michael, about U.S. airlines and the prevalence of 5G.
Yeah, this is crazy. So there's a whole bunch of U.S. airline chiefs that have gotten together and warned that the actual introduction of a new 5G service could cause U.S. commerce to grind to a halt. Now, that sounds like an extreme statement, but it's because of safety concerns, they believe, that surround the rollout of 5G technology that could interfere with critical airplane instruments. So we're talking about the areas all around major airports. And it's really interesting. So the U.S. Airlines and the Federal Aviation Administration, which obviously everyone knows as the FAA, have warned that the frequencies and transmissions strength being deployed in the United States could interfere with the precise height readings needed for bad weather landings on some jetliners. Now, of course, those kinds of statements do raise alarm bells with passengers. And so obviously then it could prevent people from flying. But also this warning came a little too late, I think. So some flights have already been canceled. Some airlines have already started to make changes. But in fairness, some of the carriers have delayed their rollout in those regions as well when it comes to this 5G technology.
Yeah, I mean, this is going to be a monster to figure out how to navigate, no pun intended, this situation.
You shouldn't laugh at that, but that was funny. Sorry.
Yeah, I mean, it's something that I don't think a lot of people in the public have generally thought about, but clearly the airline industry has been struggling in terms of how to deal with this, as well as the 5G industry in terms of their cellular towers. So another story that we'll keep a watch on. We just have about a minute left, so we do want to mention the last story. And this is from CNBC. We've talked a little bit about the metaverse on the show over the past few months. And according to CNBC, Walmart is quietly preparing to enter the metaverse. It's not so quiet if it's on the front page of CNBC, but let's move on from that point.
Honestly, like, it's crazy. They're looking to eventually maybe sell virtual goods, including electronics, home decorations, toys, sporting goods, and personal care products. So it will be very interesting to see if consumers actually have an appetite for buying virtual goods. But we'll, of course, stay on top of the metaverse. As we've said on this show, it's going to be very interesting. It's early days, and we just don't know where it's going to go. But stay with us. When we return, why one professor signed a letter to warn Spotify about Joe Rogan and the impact of misinformation.
The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. For everything new, now and next on Canada Talks, Sirius XM 167. In the Spotlight.
You're listening to The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. Hundreds of scientists, professors, doctors, nurses, and other public health professionals have urged Spotify to crack down on misinformation about COVID-19 on its streaming platform. They've singled out Joe Rogan's popular podcast, The Joe Rogan Experience, due to a recent guest that shared numerous baseless and dangerous claims with regards to COVID-19. Joining us now to talk more about this is Timothy Caulfield, who is a professor of health law and science policy at the University of Alberta. Hi there.
Hey guys, thanks for having me on.
Thank you so much for joining us today. And I think it's best to really start at the beginning in terms of how this letter came to be. I know you were one of the people who did sign it. And let's talk a little bit about the reason behind it.
Well, this started because of all of the misinformation that Joe Rogan has been pushing on his show. And he's notorious for pushing misinformation using the style of just asking questions. So he'll put on someone who is pushing misinformation and claim that he's just asking questions. That's all he's doing. But we know that using that strategy can unfortunately spread a lot of dangerous myths, not just about COVID, but a whole host of things. And I think, Amber, it's really important to be clear here. The stuff that these guests have talked about, and Malone is the one that you referenced there, Robert Malone, but there's also Peter McCullough, who was on a few weeks before. It's just demonstrably wrong here. There's no wiggle room, right? They're, you know, they're wrong about ivermectin. They're wrong about hydroxychloroquine. They're wrong about how they portray the risks associated with vaccines, on and on and on. And there's a lot of lies embedded in there too. So this isn't sort of, we need to have an in-depth scientific discussion about complex stuff. This is stuff that is wrong. And so we felt that a response was needed. And look, we are not calling for censorship. This is not about silencing. This is about asking for sensible programming decisions, right? You know, programmers of radio shows, of podcasts, of editors of newspapers to make sensible decisions so we don't promote false balance.
So interesting, the response is just asking questions, almost to say I don't have any responsibility whatsoever or accountability. It's really whatever the guests say, you know, that's the way it is. Make up your own mind. I just don't understand. I was having this conversation with someone the other day. Why would this be a good idea? Why would somebody do this if you know it's wrong? It just doesn't make sense, especially when you have a following, especially when you rely on people to respect you in a certain field. It just doesn't make sense to me because, as you said, it's not like we are, debating whether it's true or not. COVID is COVID. We know that there are vaccines. There are things that we can do to prevent it from spreading. It just doesn't make sense to me.
It doesn't make sense to me either. And again, let's emphasize that, you know, we're not talking about, you know, when should we get the booster and how much immunity do you get from Omicron versus Delta? You know, these are, you know, complex scientific questions where the data is still emerging. We're talking about flat earth kind of statements here made by these individuals. So one can only guess that Joe Rogan and his team thinks that this is going to increase his audience. And unfortunately, it probably has, right? You know, it creates this buzz, you know, we're talking about right now. And it also, I think, positions him as this individual, this maverick. And I think he likes, I know I can't read his mind, but I think he likes that role. And so, as I said, you know, we're trying to just say, you know, look, I the censorship thing is really interesting. And this is the pushback that I have gotten. I got, you know, I have 6 emails this morning saying I want to censor people. I don't. This is about making programming decisions. Is Tucker Carlson censoring me because I haven't been on the show? Is he silencing me? Is he all about cancel culture because he hasn't had Tim Caulfield on his show yet? You know, so this is about programming decisions, about the decisions that people make to put, who they put on their show, who they put in their publications.
So interesting. And I should say that you and I are part of a national initiative called Science Up First that to fight misinformation. And so I am included on a lot of these conversations on social media in terms of the rebuttal from some people who are defending Joe Rogan. And I find it really fascinating that they aren't defending the science. They can only jump, as you said, to that conversation about censorship. And I'm just curious, how you think we win this conversation, or is it just a constant period where we have to completely defend the science and what it says, and this is just the way it's going to be forever?
Yeah, well, you're right, Amber, and unfortunately, that, you know, putting the intuitively appealing rights argument first, we also know there's evidence to back this up, that is an effective way to push misinformation because it does exactly what you said. It allows you to sidestep the science, and it kind of gives a veil of legitimacy to your scientific argument, even if it's totally bunk, because it becomes part of this more noble fight for freedom of expression. Even though the fight against the freedom of expression is misconstruing that, and the science is wrong also, so the wrong on both fronts. Well, one of the things I think we need to do is get more clarity on what the rights really are. You know, you don't have a constitutional right to be on Joe Rogan. You know, that's not what freedom of expression is about, right? And also, these are private entities, right? They're not governed by the charter or the Constitution of the United States in the same way as many people are conceiving it, or the many way that these individuals are arguing about it. So I think getting more clarity on the rights side of the equation would also be valuable. Look, this is fighting misinformation. This is a battle that's going to go on, I think, for generations, unfortunately. And the good news, Amber, is that I think we're getting more evidence about how to do it. There's more interest in fighting misinformation. And I think more people like you are getting involved in the fight.
Is that the first best step with regards to private entities? Is it about private entities making clear, strong policies and making themselves and anybody that works with them accountable? So these platforms and businesses that these personalities work with, you know, should they be putting in strict policies, taking a stance, making everybody accountable? Because it seems that it really does come down to allowing personalities to push misinformation and disinformation for their own gains. So are you an organization or a platform that is for that or against, or am I just being too simplistic?
Well, I think that's one of the tools that needs to be deployed. You know, there's no doubt that the spread of misinformation, a very complex phenomenon. We have to use every tool at our disposal. But that's absolutely one of them, I think. And that's what we're calling for in our letter, right? That just to have those sort of sensible policies. And the other thing, Michael, you don't even have to go that far. Part of it is also how this is framed on these shows. If Joe Rogan framed this and said, look, you know, this is a fringe idea. The body of evidence says that you're wrong. You know, really constantly emphasizing what the weight of evidence says. That's a different kind of show than just enabling the spread of misinformation. And if I don't know if you watched it, unfortunately, I've watched both those shows. And he just acts like he's amazed. And boy, are these ever good points? And how come more people don't know about it? It's not just asking questions. It's sort of a forum for the spread of misinformation and a forum to legitimize that misinformation. And that needs to stop.
Well, listen, we want to thank you so much for all the work that you're doing in this space. We also want to remind people that we are not just talking about a battle of words. People are getting hurt and potentially losing their lives because of COVID misinformation and disinformation. And that is a real fact. And it's a problem that continues to grow. So thank you so much for being here. Thank you for being part of this conversation. And we'd love to have you back on in the future.
Anytime, guys. Really enjoyed it.
Up next, we introduce you to a new social network called Vegan Nation.
The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. For everything new, now and next on Canada Talks, Sirius XM 167. Aptastic.
Welcome back to The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. It's time now to take a look at some new and trending apps. First up, we're going to talk about Vegan Nation, which is a global ecosystem that empowers communities and businesses who believe in a more sustainable way of living, where you can essentially find individuals who are conscious about what they eat and who are living the vegan lifestyle. Michael, I think we're going to hear more and more about communities like this springing up online. We know many people are choosing to go vegetarian or vegan, have plant-based diets. And the final thing I'll say on this is we also know there are more people who are living in a category called flexitarians. I don't know if you've heard that before, but it's basically saying that, hey, I'm going to mostly eat vegetarian or vegan, but I may have a steak once a week. And for many people, that's a lifestyle that is a bit easier to maintain. So find this pretty fascinating that we're seeing these global communities pop up online. And I imagine they're just going to grow in popularity.
Yeah, and I think it is more about just becoming more responsible and more aware of what we're purchasing, what we're eating, you know, who we are purchasing from, and looking at that entire supply chain. I think a lot more people really do care about where their dollars are going. And then obviously they very much care about their health. And so they're making sure that they have the tools to be not only educated, but making, you know, wise decisions. So I think that this one, Vegan Nation, is an excellent one for that entire ecosystem. And it's really cool. You know, you get to discover, you know, different eateries that you might not necessarily have found just by wandering the streets yourself in wherever you might be. And there's also a rewards program that's built in there. So it's, you know, it's got the full experience that you would expect from an online community like this.
Absolutely. And it expands even beyond food. So they talk a little bit about how to buy vegan friendly products like sneakers, for example, and the list really goes on. So like Michael said, they bring together an enormous amount of resources where you can find out the best places to go to support your lifestyle. And I think this is a move in the right direction. And I love that it's giving people that option. I kind of laughed a little bit. I went to the FAQs and one of the questions is this an actual nation? And I thought that was kind of funny. So they just do describe it as a community of people who basically have similar interests. And this is why they call it Vegan Nation. So I could see this, again, becoming one of those apps. It's available on iOS and Android devices that people really start to have on their phones. And I think people are making more conscious decisions in all parts of their lives.
They certainly are. Well, sticking with the online community, we're looking at creator community in this next app. And of course, we talk a lot about creators and content creators on the show. This next app is called The Roll App. And now it aims to create an easy way for creators to make an extra buck while portraying a potentially more authentic version of themselves to their fans. So of course, we do know that it is tough for content creators to earn money in regards to all of their content that they push out, which we all enjoy. So this app is actually helping them do that. And it's very interesting too, because this app is giving you a different way to view and connect with the creator. So it's actually giving you access to their camera roll. So you kind of get an insider's look into everything that they're doing.
Yeah. And before people yell at us on social media, I do want to say, and they make it clear in this TechCrunch article, that even though it's called roll, it isn't about giving people access to your camera roll. That is not the point. That, as they say in the article, would be a disaster waiting to happen. That is just the name that they use for the app. So the idea is you get exclusive content from a creator who you really want to follow. And you're part of this community that is able to pay, as Michael said, for that access. I think we're going to see tighter communities like this, because let's be honest, you know, the nature of public and broad social media has kind of erupted over the years, and not everybody wants that. They maybe want these more intimate groups and these more intimate experiences. And it really is, again, this trend that we're seeing in terms of the kind of segmentation of content, right? You know, nobody has the same newsletters or publications anymore that they follow. Everybody has very unique places where they're consuming content. So it makes it hard to really market to a mass audience anymore.
It certainly does. And you're absolutely right. So I'm glad you made that distinction. They're not giving you a literal access, but their tagline is giving them access to it, as in, as you said, exclusive videos and exclusive photos and content. So I think this one's a really good one. And also on that flip side, that they're able to make some money on their content as well.
Yes, absolutely. And we know for content creators, that is always a challenge, because not all the platforms make it easy for them to do just that. So it's another way that they are able to have an offering. Now, the last one we're going to talk about is called Locket Widget. I believe this is available for iOS users only, and it allows you to see live pics from your friends. So basically, it's kind of like a portal to be able to see a glimpse of what your friends are looking at on a regular basis. So when a friend sends you a picture, as it describes in the Apple Store, it instantly appears in your Locket widget on your home screen. So you have those special photos available anytime you want them in this little locket, which of course is borrowing the name from the physical locket that many people probably still wear, but a lot more people probably used to wear around their necks.
I think I like this app just because, obviously, if it's a friend that you're using this with, clearly it's a close friend, or choose wisely who you allow to send you photos that kind of goes over that lock screen, because obviously we have a lock screen for a reason and we don't want to see all these notifications or get bombarded with people contacting us. So I would recommend only doing it with a couple of people that you're familiar and friendly with, because of that, you could be in a meeting and they can send you an inappropriate photo or make you laugh or something if you look down at your phone.
Yeah. So just out of curiosity, is that how it works? Because my understanding was it just showed up on your home screen. So I'm not an iOS user, so I'm not too familiar with this. So not necessarily on your lock screen, but instead on your home screen. So you had easy access to it. Is that how you're understanding it, Michael?
Yeah, sorry. I think you're right. It's on the home screen, not the lock screen. Because I would freak out if it was the lock screen. And because I have that there for a reason.
Yeah, I was just thinking about you, and I was thinking that would be a terrible app for you.
That would be a disaster. I'm already all over the place and get sidetracked and easily. It's just not good. But there are three great apps. I really like the Vegan Nation that we mentioned. We've got the Roll app that's for creators and following your favorite creators. And then, of course, that lock screen, the Locket that helps you send photos and connect with people via their home screen. Got to get
Absolutely.
That right.
Yeah. So it's called Locket Widget. That's the last one for iOS devices. And again, just a cool way to be able to see those live photos from up to five of your closest friends. So you have easier access to them. So a lot of great picks there in terms of our apps of the week. And Michael, if people want to send us some apps, they have an easy way to do just that.
Absolutely. All they have to do is tweet us at Emberback and at MBankruptAdia and use the hashtag The Feed. Coming up, TV superstar Debbie Travis joins us to talk about joy.
The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. For everything new, now and next on Canada Talks, Sirius XM 167. Power Friend.
You're listening to The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. It's exceptionally timely, I think, to have international television personality, design guru, and best-selling author Debbie Travis joining us now. I think we all could use a little more joy in our lives. And in her latest book, Joy, Life Lessons from a Tuscan Villa, she discusses increasing the levels of joy in our daily lives through a healthy mind and body, inspired by the ancient Tuscan lifestyle. It's really a pleasure to have you, Debbie. I guess the best place to start with is, how did you find your joy? Because obviously everybody out there listening kind of wants to find it too.
I know. And when I started this book, it was like before COVID. And then I kept was like finishing it off during. And I was like, maybe I'll just call it miserable. You know, what a horrible world we were in, you know. And then I realized that, you know, everything that I was writing about is what we were craving. And I think the last 2 years has kind of drummed that home. But I think my joy is really, it's come out of simplicity, because, you know, jumping from a very heavy television career with all the, you know, everything that's thrown at you in that world, to something where, you know, the day-to-day panic is if the wild boar have eaten my tulips, you know. So, you know, and then you kind of look at the simple things. And when you realize, because I think the difference between joy and happiness is like a long-term thing. We're all looking for happiness. How do we bring more happiness? You know, how do we have a happy life? Joy is a kind of immediate thing. So you bump into a friend, or somebody just smiles for no reason at you walking down the street and you smile back. You know, it's that immediate feeling. And then it's the science behind that, because I joined up with somebody, a great, great friend of mine, who's a nutritional therapist. And everything I was talking about has a reason and a purpose scientifically for our health. You know, the hormones that things create, you know, the endorphins, the cortisol, you know, all the stuff we keep hearing about now, there's actually a science behind a smile. There's a science behind a good night's sleep. And, you know, it all resonates in building that, those levels of joy each day. So a little bit, Joe, a simple thing, go and talk to a tree in the park, sounds mad, but actually it really does have a purpose.
One of the things I wanted to ask you about, as I'm looking through the book, there are so many practical tips. And right now I'm looking at the joy ladder. And I think this is a really interesting way to look at joy through colors.
Exactly. And, you know, I'm kind of known for color. But, you know, I was trying to think, how do I explain this? Because a lot of kind of health books and mindfulness books are quite complicated. And, you know, I just want to make things simple and easy for people. And so what I would do is I'd say to Jackie, who's the nutritional therapist, I say, you know, explain it to me. And if I can understand those big words, then we're in. So I thought, well, how do I explain where we are now? So before you even start, it's like, what is my feeling today, tomorrow, long term, over the week? And I was thinking, God, how do I draw a picture? And I was actually sitting looking at an olive grove on our land in Tuscany, and there was an old ladder there, an old picking ladder, wood ladder. So I got a load of napkins and I started on the bottom rung in black, and then it goes to dark blue, and then to pale blue, and then green. And it's the kind of the rainbow all the way up to red. And then you think, well, where am I? And if you say, so there's people can say, well, you know, I was in the black yesterday for a little bit, but, you know, then I went up a little bit and down. But if you say, oh, I was in the black for the last month and things aren't getting any better, then that's really where, that's a dark place where maybe you need to get, you know, some professional help. But then you find, you know, we all go into the blue zones up and down all day. You know, somebody's rude to us and we like feel angry, or, you know, and then nobody's in the red swaying at the top of the ladder every day. You know, red is like, you know, you'd be a beaming Cheshire cat. You'd be ridiculous. And nobody can kind of balance that long at the ladder. But we want to have as much as we possibly can in those, you know, kind of yellow and orange zones. And what you can do is just get some children's crayons and mark on a calendar and then look back over the week and think, you know what? I'm spending too much time in those darker zones. I need to start implementing some things, or trying to kind of say to yourself, well, why am I not feeling, or what time of day? And actually a woman we spoke to said, you know, she did this test and she said, I always had these dark colors on Wednesday evening. And then she said, I really looked, what was happening every Wednesday? She used to talk to her mother on the phone. So it was like, you know, her mum was complaining about this and that, and she wasn't happy. You know, she was, you know, stuck inside. So, you know, how can you change that? How can you say, okay, mum, we're going to speak Saturday mornings and only about good stuff this week? You know, so you can see what triggers. So it's trying to find your own triggers about increasing that happiness level as much as you can. And when you increase your you increase your vitality. And when you increase your vitality, you increase your longevity.
Well, it is interesting. It does sound very much that you need to pay attention and be very mindful of what you do and how and why. I mean, I hear exactly what you're saying. I usually wear, you know, black, gray, and blue. My sister I'm with at the moment, and she made me buy, a green color and a yellow color. It was very odd for me, but I am happier in it. I know that sounds ridiculous, but I understand what you're saying when it comes to color. What I found interesting in this book and that resonated with me, especially, you know, given COVID and the separation of the last 2 years of a lot of people, this feeling wanted and valued. How do you go about, you know, feeling wanted and valued at the same time as feeling joy? Because I know that they're three very different things and not always aligned.
Yeah, well, that's really this connection, these life lessons from a Tuscan village is not meaning, you know, everybody has to go to Tuscany to find this. Tuscany is an area that is in a bit of a time warp. You know, people have, you know, they live way into their hundreds. They, you know, they eat the same food all the time. They have the same friends. They, you know, they have community, they have purpose, but it's very much how our, you know, grandparents lived. So it's looking at those elements that come out of this traditional lifestyle and then saying, well, where have we lost them? So the most important one of all is community. And, you know, having a crowd around us. So we had that at school. We have that at university. We have that at work. And then as you get older, you know, it gets harder. You're no longer meeting your kids outside the school gate and chatting to other people and having the opportunity to meet people. You go to the gym and you go in and you go out, you know. So of course, this has been exaggerated now with lockdown where we really know we must reach out. So I think the first thing to say to people is have courage. And you just, it's so rare if you knock on somebody's door, a neighbor or somebody you might have met through somebody else and say, hey, do you want to come around and roll some pasta Sunday afternoon? I can pretty much guarantee the people who would maybe throw a bowl of boiling water at you are very get off my doorstep.
I know, but I wouldn't roll pasta now. I was like, can I knock on that person's door?
Yeah, exactly. But it's actually, once you do it once or twice, and anybody like me who's an expat, who's moved to different countries, you have to make the effort. You know, you really have to try and reach out. And once you do it, it gets easier and easier. So that's why there's recipes in the book, because these are kind of very traditional recipes in the area, very simple, very inexpensive, but it's about like jam. If somebody had said to me 5 years ago when my life was really glamorous, you're making jam? I'd be like, me making jam jelly? Are you kidding? but it's not about the jam. It's about saying to three friends, okay, everybody bring a friend. Everybody bring three jars, come round to my place, you know, Sunday evening, and we're going to make jam together. And we're going to open some bottles of wine. You're going to laugh. And it's not the jam. It's the reason for doing it. It's giving people a reason to call somebody. Same as like rolling pasta out. You can get just as good a pasta in the shop, but making your own pasta. If you go to Tuscany, you'll see every Sunday afternoon, they bring their tables outside. They literally lift their kitchen table, put it in the street, and you'll see three nonas, three grannies rolling their pasta, chatting about the kids, their lazy husbands, their this and this, talking to people in the street. They can buy just as good a pasta down the road, but it's the community. It's bringing it together. So it's a way of finding ways of making friends, really. Mm-hmm. And that's where you get your value. That's where you get your being wanted. Because the minute you're not needed, you're dead. You know, if nobody needs you, you know what? That's what they say. If nobody needs you, what's left? You know, and what I did in the book, I interviewed a load of locals. You know, and their little stories, they're simple stories, But there's one local who's actually on my street in London. It's just a typical back street, London street, you know. And she's 98. I saw her this morning and she's baking today. She lives alone. I'm like, who are you baking for? She said, well, those people at number 32, you know, da, 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 and those people at da, da. That's what keeps you alive. It's not the cookie. It's not the baking. It's the actual, you know, knocking on somebody's door and saying, I've made you a box of shortbread biscuits or something. And it's that wonder of then people, you know, reciprocate and, oh, come and have a cup of tea. And this is what our grandparents used to do. And mm-hmm. we think we're too busy for that. And that's what we have to shake. You know, we've seen what it's like not to be as busy now, you know, and be stuck inside. And it's a matter of really just rethinking how we used to do it and bringing that back in. And those levels of joy will go up.
Absolutely. And I just want to remind people before we let you go that your book is available now. It's called Joy: Life Lessons from a Tuscan Villa. It's a joy to read. It's a beautiful book. It's so aesthetically pleasing, which is not surprising. And Debbie, we wanted to thank you so much for joining us today on the feed. I miss seeing you backstage on Marilyn.
I know.
I'll get to see you soon. Thanks for being on the show.
Hopefully soon. Bye, guys. Have a wonderful, wonderful day.
Thanks so much for joining us.
Up next, the CEO of Willful joins us to talk about estate planning made easy.
The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. For everything new, now and next on Canada Talks, Sirius XM 167. Techstar.
This is The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. It's not something we often prioritize, but it is very important when it comes to planning for the future once loved ones have passed on. The process of planning for the end of life is becoming more digitized and increasingly more accessible. One company that is making estate planning affordable, easy, and convenient is Willful. And we've got the CEO and co-founder of Willful joining us now. Erin, it is a pleasure to have you on. You're a good friend of Amber, and we've known each other for some years in different capacities. But now you are the CEO and co-founder of your own company, Willful. Let's start at the beginning. Why is this so important, and why do people not necessarily prioritize their estate?
Well, first, thanks so much for having me, Michael and Amber. So excited to be here. And yeah, I mean, it's not fun to think about, Michael. I think that's probably the main reason. When you get up in the morning, you probably do pretty much anything to avoid thinking about your own mortality. And we are in New Year's resolution season, so it might be more top of mind than usual, but you know, it can be complex. People don't know where to start with estate planning. It can seem overwhelming. You know, do I have to go to a lawyer? What kind of paperwork do I need to get together? And it can often paralyze people with important decisions. Who should take care of my children if I were to pass away? Who should I leave things to? So all of that combined with death being a pretty uncomfortable topic leads to a lot of lack of action by Canadians and Americans.
I think you're exactly right. And we should say, just so you know, in the context of this show today, that we just had Debbie Travis on talking about joy. She was talking about making jam, you know, dropping off pasta at a neighbor's. So it's a hard turn to start to talk about death tech, which it's commonly referred to. But like you said, it's so critically important. And one of the things I've loved about watching your journey with this company is how you have been able to grow this business and also bring along different regions so that we can, as individuals, do more in the digital space instead of relying on a paper-first experience. Can you talk a little bit about that piece?
For sure. And, you know, it's nice to know that I'm a buzzkill, pun intended, after Debbie teaching you how to make jam. Everyone's turning off their show right now. It's typically a pretty paper-based experience. So the traditional will-making experience is, you know, you go to a lawyer, you draft up this physical paper will, you gather your witnesses in person. And when COVID hit, it just became very untenable to do that because no one was going to in-person appointments and you weren't allowed to see anybody to be your your witnesses. So we really push the government in Ontario and other provinces to make it more digital. I mean, we do pretty much everything online, as you always talk about on this show, and yet we're still signing a will like it's the 1910s. So we actually have seen some progress. In British Columbia, they just passed a law allowing for completely digital wills. And in the US, there are several states that that do allow digital signatures, like Nevada and Florida. So it's a small percentage of regions, but we're hoping that other places catch up and that soon you'll be able to execute a will completely online anywhere.
Erin, am I right in saying there's a statistic, and I can't remember where I read it, that more than 50% of Canadians are without a will? That's a staggering amount. I guess my question is, you know, who should get a will and when is the right time? Because I imagine lots of listeners would think they don't need a will, or they're not old enough to have a will.
Absolutely. One of the biggest myths that I hear is that you have to be old or rich to have a will. And it's simply not true. If you have a spouse, children, pets, anyone that relies on you, or assets of any size, whether they're millions of dollars or whether it's just $5,000 in a savings account, you really should have a will. Because if you pass away without one, there's a government formula that dictates who gets your assets and who takes care of children, or, you know, you have to go through the courts to see who might take care of your pets or become your executor. So it really just puts you in the driver's seat. And so, you know, if you have any of those life moments, you've gotten married, you've maybe gotten divorced, you've had children, you've gotten a pet, those are really the inflection points to think about it. And as someone who just had my first baby, a 10-week-old, we're actually updating our will. So that's another key reminder too, is once you create a will, it's not a set it and forget it thing. It should change as your life does. So it's always up to date.
So one of the questions I wanted to ask you, because we often ask this to entrepreneurs who join us, is how has the pandemic changed your business?
We actually saw our busiest period ever in the early, you know, 6 to 8 weeks of the pandemic. And let's be honest, that's because everyone was pretty darn scared of death. No one really knew what the pandemic was. And so we did see a lot of people rushing to get these things in order. And that's partly because people put it off. It's always on the to-do list, but it always seems to slip down the to-do list. And so I think what COVID did is it really reminded people the unexpected can happen anytime. And I should get these important things that aren't super fun, but are really important, checked off my list, whether it's creating a will, starting an emergency fund, getting life insurance. So we've actually seen that it's really helped us to highlight the importance of estate planning. And it's also accelerated the pace of digital change. So we have seen a lot of those digital will laws become accelerated because of COVID and the lack of ability to meet in person.
And Erin, last question for you. As an entrepreneur leading this company, what was the most interesting thing that you've learned about yourself and doing this and launching this company?
Yeah, I mean, my husband actually had the idea for Willful after one of his family members passed away. And when he told me about it, I literally said, could you pick a less sexy topic, please? I mean, wills, this is what we're going to commit our lives to. But then when I started digging and saw how few people have them and how important it is and how there really weren't very many good online options, I became very passionate. So I think what surprised me is that I'm now an estate planning expert and someone who devotes my life to this topic. But I think it's really important. And hopefully we can influence every Canadian and American listening to get a will.
Absolutely. Well, we want to thank you again for joining us. And just in case you missed the top of the show, that was Erin Burry, who's the CEO and co-founder of Willful. We encourage everybody to go right now to Willful, see what it's all about. And trust me, it's a good experience and a good team behind this company. Erin, thank you so much for being on the show. Congrats again on your newborn and hi to everybody in the family.
Thanks, Amber and Michael. Appreciate it.
Up next, what in the Wordle?
The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. For everything new, now and next on Canada Talks, Sirius XM 167. Socially speaking.
All right, so we're going to dive into Wordle in just a second. But first up, a cybersecurity tip. This cybersecurity tip is brought to you by Norton. Now, let's say you've unboxed a brand new device, maybe a smartphone, a laptop, a smartwatch, or a smart TV, and you can't wait to start using it. Well, before you open up that new tech gadget and becomes part of your day-to-day, consider the following 5 tips to maintain your security and online privacy. First up, make sure your home's Wi-Fi router is secure before letting your new devices connect your home network. Second up, when using a device outside your home, avoid unsecure public Wi-Fi or set up an extra layer of protection with a virtual private network, also called a VPN. Third, use Touch ID or Face ID to add biometric security to your device. Fourth, create a new strong lock screen passcode, as well as a strong unique passcode for all of the applications that you use on your new device. And finally, number five, install device security software to help ensure your device is protected against hackers and threats like malware. Now, Norton 360 makes it easy to stay protected on your phones, computers, and tablets with continuous uninterrupted device protection. No one can prevent all cybercrime or identity theft, but Norton 360 is what helped protect my devices and my family's devices against cyber threats. For more information, visit Staples in store or online. Okay, so this week we are going to talk about Wordle. And one of the reasons we're going to talk about this is that it really is probably one of the biggest kind of pop culture games that we've seen over the past few months. And it's exploding and people are sharing how they're doing after they play Wordle. Aaron, I may go to you first because I know Wordle is new to Michael. Aaron, do you
play? What in the world?
Do you play, Aaron?
Despite the fact that I love word games and I play words with friends every day, and I have, I think, 10 to 15 year streak with certain people going back and forth in words with friends, I do not play Wordle. Also because I'm a bit of a curmudgeon and I feel like it overwhelmed my Twitter feed so quickly that I muted the words and muted the Wordles. But also because it's a digital version of an old existing game, the game Mastermind. And in these days of COVID and lockdowns, I'm trying to play tabletop games, board games, classic games when I can. And so if there's a digital version of the game where you play against the app or against the computer, I'd rather play the tangible version of the game against actual people in my household. So I understand the appeal, but I am not on board because as some people tell me, I hate everything.
Wow.
That's a wow. So wait, Amber, is it kind of like Wheel of Fortune? You know, like where they have a word or two, a letter or two, and you have to guess what the word is. Is that not what this is? But just like, oh, we're on like an app?
Well, in that case, you could say it's probably like Scrabble and like many other games. But yes, okay, sure. It's a little bit like
But in fairness, Wheel of Fortune, the word is already there. They've picked it for you. You have no idea. And then you like letter W. And then like you have to see it. But in this instance, you're saying that it's always a five-letter word. And you only have six guesses. What happens if you don't get it? Does like the screen blow up?
No, the screen does not blow up. And I should say you're exactly right. So if I go to the Wordle game today, like you said, it has to be, it's always a five-letter word. And after each guess, the color of the tiles will change to show how close your guess was to the word. So that's an important thing to think about as well. So for example, if the word is weary, which is the example that they use today, then the W would show up green, saying that it's in the correct spot. So that if it's yellow in this case, in terms of another word guess, that would mean that the letter I, if it's in yellow, is in the word, which in this case would be pills, but it's in the wrong spot. And then if you guess the letter U and it's gray, then that letter is not in the word at all. So basically, it's a word guessing game and pretty straightforward. And like you said, people are all, like Aaron mentioned, people are sharing their experiences on social media. And that's why you're starting to see Wordle more and more all over the place.
I get it's a game. It's pretty straightforward. I don't see the big deal of how it's like anything different to what's out there. What I do like about this is I could see how useful this is for people who need brain training apps, and especially elder people or people that have cognitive problems. And so I can see the value in that and staying active. I like that idea because it's set as template, and then it's challenging. And I like the fact that it engages a community if you want to, or you can play in isolation as well. So I like those components, and I can see the value there in connecting and or training.
Yeah, and we should say that there's only one puzzle a day, so everybody's playing the same puzzle. I know people get really frustrated if someone shares the answer online because they've kind of ruined it, kind of a spoiler for everybody else.
We could teach them not to go online. This is brilliant. I love this game already. We could help save the planet and stop people from spending too much time on social media because they don't want the answer. I love it.
And also should say that according to CNET, about 300,000 people are playing it daily. Wow. It's a free game. So it's just fun, right? There's nothing beyond that. It's just a fun
for
game.
For now.
And, it's just a guessing game, right? So, yeah. I don't know. Aaron, do you think this is one of those things, in terms of kind of rad or fad? Is this like a big rad or fad that's going to dip in the next few weeks?
Yeah, definitely. I appreciate the fact that everyone in the world is playing the same game at the same time with the same word. But, look, Among Us is huge and that dipped also. So this is going to, be big for a while and then it'll be gone. Wordle will move on like a turtle.
Oh, I'm totally funny. Not playing right now, by the way, guys. Like, that's not why I'm distracted at all.
I could see how this could make people angry because they only have one a day and it teaches them moderation. I don't think this is a very interesting a test for people, their patience. Sure. It's extraordinary. I still won't play, but great.
Yeah. And you know what? Let us know what you think. You can find us easily online. We do need to wrap the show. You can tweet at us at Amber Mack and at MBancroft80. And of course, use the hashtag The Feed.
This is The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B on SiriusXM Canada Talks, Channel 167.